The MarTech Podcast is a proud member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. Looking to launch or scale your podcast? I Hear Everything delivers podcast production, growth, and monetization solutions that transform your words into profit. Ready to give your brand a voice? Then visit IHearEverything.com.
From advertising to software as a service to data.
Across all of our programs and clients, we've seen a 55 to 65% open rate.
Getting brands authentically integrated into content performs better than TV advertising.
Typical lifespan of an article is about 24 to 36 hours.
If we're reaching out to the right person with the right message and a clear call to action, then it's just a matter of timing.
Welcome to the MarTech Podcast, a member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. In this podcast, you'll hear the stories of world-class marketers that use technology to drive business results and achieve career success. Here's the host of the MarTech Podcast, Benjamin Shapiro.
Welcome to the MarTech Podcast. I'm your host, Benjamin Shapiro, and today we're going to discuss what drives SaaS success. Joining us is Randy Wooten, who is the CEO of Maxio, which is an industry-leading billing and financial operations platform for high-growth B2B SaaS companies. Maxio helps companies get funded and stay funded. And today, Randy and I are going to discuss how we can decipher the state of SaaS. All right, here's the first part of my conversation with Randy Wooten, the CEO of Maxio. Randy, welcome to the MarTech Podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Excited to have you on the show. We've got some mutual friends. I've read a lot about your business. Excited to hear a little bit about what you're doing and also what you've learned about the SaaS industry. First off, tell me a little bit about Maxio. What does your company do? How'd you get involved in that?
So I've been in MarTech a long time. It was probably 20-something years in ad tech and MarTech before making the shift to finance tech or fintech. Maxio is a billing and financial operations platform, basically a system of record for your billing and invoicing, sits between the CRM and the general ledger when we sell to CFOs. Why this is relevant more broadly is because the data that we help you collect and aggregate becomes the insights for how to run your business. So when you're thinking about metrics like LTV to CAC, magic number, gross retention, net retention, all of that comes from the billing and invoicing data. So it's part of the reason I joined the company was because I was a customer of the product at my last CEO gig, and it changed the way I thought of how to be a CEO and how to manage the business, manage the board, manage investors.
So what occurs to me based on your description of the company is you're the right person to talk to about the state of SaaS. First off, you're a recovering MarTecher like myself,
yeah.
But you also selling to SaaS companies. So you get to see both sides of the coin. Maxio also put together a Maxio growth report. So tell me a little bit about some of the research that you've done at Maxio and how are you monitoring the industry at large?
Well, it was part of the reason I came and joined this company. Everybody wants to join a system of record. And if you are the billing and invoicing engine, you are seeing the actual data. So compared to some of the surveys that are out there that are self-reported surveys in terms of growth and employees and sales comp, which I think those surveys are incredibly helpful when they allow for broad-based questioning and then aggregating of information. And all of us have used the Benchmarket reports, the Key Bank reports, as we're trying to understand how to run our business. The difference is with the billing and invoicing data, we know what's going on in terms of growth rates. So we have about 2,300 customers. They skew SMB mid-market. So think about pre-revenue up to about $100 million. And we were able to split that cohort into different segments by stage. So series A, B, C, by size, and by go-to-market model. So PLG or usage consumption model versus more of a sales-led motion. And so those insights, we started about a year ago, being able to aggregate them up as an enormous effort to get into the data, make sense of the data, construct the data, and then start layering insights. And then every quarter, we provided an update in 2023, and our year-end report was just published in January. And why I think it's valuable is, one, it's rooted in real data. Number two is it's timely. It's coming out within weeks of the end of the quarter. So CEOs and CFOs can use it to triangulate on how their performance was compared to a cohort. Again, about $15 billion of billing and invoicing data is going across the system. And they can use that to manage the board, set targets, et cetera. So you don't have to wait for the full year to get the survey data.
Okay, so you said $15 billion of invoicing data spread across everything from pre-revenue to, I guess, is it pre-revenue?
Yeah, pre-revenue. I mean, the revenue is not going to be on the billing at that point. They're getting the billing system set up. But as soon as they start billing, we're tracking it up to, you know, we have customers, a couple of customers that are IPO or public companies, but in general, it's under $100 million.
Yeah, you're getting up to mid-market at that point.
Correct.
What is the type of information? Obviously, you can segment all the invoicing data, but what are you able to help the people that are consuming the report understand about their segments? Is it all just, are you making as much money as your cohort? Or what are some of the benchmarks you look at?
Answer it two ways. One is the value of the data that people get when they're customers is it's really around the deferred revenue, revenue recognition, and managing your revenue. And so understanding how to augment your financial statements, your three financial statements, that data in terms of growth rates is what we're primarily publishing and helping people understand as benchmarks. So if you're a Series A company growing at X percentage, you could say in the US using a consumption-based model, you could look at our report and say, hey, what is the average growth rate for other people in that segment with that context? Broad-based, what I'd tell you is what we saw was there was a 31% year-over-year growth in Q2 of 2022 across our broad set of customers. Today, in January, at the end of Q4 of 2023, that growth rate had dropped to about 17%. And what we saw in Q2 and Q3 was at about 15-16%. So the heady days of 2020, 2021 are over. And as many people are writing about, hey, we're coming back to what the new normal is somewhere between 15 and 20% growth. If you're north of 20%, that's going to be very strong. It's no longer assumed that you got to be, I would imagine, VCs and PEs, that is no longer going to assume that you got to be north of 30% to be a high growth company. So I think we've seen a reset, and the data we're looking broadly across our customer base is helping to inform that.
What I'm hearing from you is that the pre-interest rate hike days, the expectation for a high growth company was something like 30% per year, not looking at specific industries or stages, but your high growth, if you're growing 30% year over year, now that the expectation is a little less growth, 20%, have we seen as growth started to change, more of a focus on profitability metrics, how that is actually trickling through to the bottom line?
Absolutely. And I've written about this, other people have as well, is this idea of growth at all costs to efficient growth or disciplined growth. One of the metrics that people are using is the rule of 40. So that's the combination of your growth rate plus your EBITDA margin. So if you're a 20% grower, then you need to have a 20% EBITDA margin. And right now, it's been interesting. Bessemer has come out with a new paper. I think it was launched in January, arguing for a new rule of X, which is it gives some sort of multiplier for the growth rate compared to EBITDA, because they say, look, growth rate is going to actually determine more your valuation than the EBITDA margin. So I do think there is this, it's a little bit of art versus science, but having a rule of 40 type metrics that you're tying into to indicate that you're driving efficient growth, making decisions about investments versus just growth at all costs has been the sea change we've seen over the last 2 years.
Okay, so for the companies that are technically not high growth company, there is future and possibility for success if you have a business that converts your existing customers into profit efficiently. If you're a 1% growth company and you're a 39% EBITDA, turns out that's pretty attractive. Is all of this data used essentially to benchmark for future investment? How do people use this type of growth data?
One other comment, and then I'll answer your question specifically. I think there are two paths. There's the high growth path that if you're still 30 to 40% growth and you can have that predictable, replicable sales model, and you've got your new CAC ratio, which we can talk a little bit about, dialed in, that is a profile, and that's going to command the highest multiples. That's the world that I've lived in my whole life. Yes, you got to go drive growth. So you can have a little negative EBITDA there as well. And every once in a while, if you can get profitable, to show you can get profitable, and then you invest in growth and you just go, go, go. There is another profile, which is the one we're talking about. I don't know if in technology you're going to get a lot of investment if you're zero growth and positive 40% EBITDA. But if you're down at like the 10 to 15% growth, which is still okay, especially compared to many other industries, slow growth manufacturing, et cetera, your EBITDA needs to be up about 35%. And I think it's a different profile of a company, how you're solving for it, how you're driving scale, efficiency, labor, et cetera, is going to be different for those two profiles. The worst thing is to get caught in the middle where, for example, let's say you're 100% year-over-year growth company. You have negative 60% EBITDA. So you're still a rule of 40. All of a sudden, your top line starts to wobble and you can't pull your costs out fast enough to bring that EBITDA margin, negative EBITDA margin up. And now you're churning and burning. And that is totally. And so I think it really is, you got to pick one of those two paths, get aligned with your investors. To your second question, it really is about, I think, setting expectations with current investors in terms of when you're going to need new money and at what valuation. There are a bunch of companies out there that raise at really high valuations, which looks great, but they didn't grow into those. And so they're going to have to do a recap. So as you go forward, what is your profile? Do you think it can be? And you know, because the new investors are coming in to fund future growth. And you got to be able to show you're either category A, high growth company, category B, efficient growth company.
Is there somewhere in between where you mentioned, well, if you're 100% growth and negative 60% EBITDA, you're a cash furnace? How do people evaluate in SaaS where we all want to be these high growth companies? That's been the sexy profile of companies for nearly a decade. And the one that sticks in my mind is, you know, WeWork, like I mentioned, a cash furnace, right? High growth, growth at all costs. But does this thing actually make money? No, and it never has and it never did. And then the flip side, like 20% growth, 20% EBITDA. Like you mentioned, you don't want to be 100 and negative 60, but what if you were a little of both? How is that viewed?
So I'm not an investor. I would just say that from what I've heard, and I think this is what Bessemer was doing with its rule of X and some of the other industry reports that are coming out, is that growth is valued more than EBITDA margin in terms of the valuation that you're going to get. So I would not encourage people to solve for EBITDA margin if they think they have a replicable go-to-market engine. And let me talk about that just a second. So replicable, how do you know if you got a good, efficient engine, go-to-market engine? The ratio, the metric that I've used now is the new CAC ratio. Basically, how many dollars are you spending in sales and marketing to get $1 of ARR? Before I came to Maxio, I was more of a fan, just I didn't know better. I would use percent sales and marketing of revenue. And you'd use like 40% as your target. And that is too blunt of an instrument. I think getting really clear about your growth engine and is your CAC ratio for a company about our size, you're selling contracts at $20,000 to $40,000, the CAC ratio would be something about a 1.2, for example. So we're spending $1.20 for every dollar of ARR. Getting clear on what that number is historically for you, how you can drive efficiency in marketing, which we can chat on the MarTech podcast, and getting aligned with your investors is wicked important, because that is what in future investors was one are going to see. They want to see that, one, your growth engine makes sense in terms of, I put more money in, I know what I'm going to get, and that you've addressed churn. So you have a good customer base north of 90% in gross retention. So you don't have that leaky bucket problem. And you have an expansion motion, so you can have an expansion CAC ratio where you're investing marketing and some sales efforts to sell in products to your current customer base to drive your net retention. So I think those three components are what people are probably looking at as you double click on growth versus how much you're spending on growth versus how you're solving for EBITDA margin.
Time for a 1 minute break to hear from our presenting sponsor, Mutinex. In 1919, John Wanamaker said, "Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. I just don't know which half." Well, the advertising landscape has changed since then, and instead of reaching your audience on two channels, you're probably reaching them on 20. Turns out John didn't know how easy he had it. But that doesn't mean that you should give up on striving towards marketing effectiveness. No matter how complex your marketing strategy is, Mutinex Growth OX is the market mix modeling platform that measures the impact of marketing on your bottom line. Mutinex's market mix modeling platform calibrates your insights against the latest market conditions so you can make media and marketing investment decisions confidently and quickly. Ready to take your team from "I think" to "I know"? Then join brands like Samsung, ING, and Asahi who make better marketing decisions with Mutinex. Mutinex Growth OX, your best decision starts here. To learn more about Mutinex, go to Mutinex.co. That's Mutinex.co. Okay, here's the rest of today's interview. A special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Mutinex. Ready to take your team from "I think" to "I know"? then join brands like Samsung, ING, and Asahi who make better marketing decisions with Mutinex. Mutinex Growth OX, the marketing mix modeling platform that makes measuring ROI fast, easy, and cost-effective. Request a demo at mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co. What's interesting to me is as you talk through what the new CAC ratio is, that it was a 1.2, meaning you spend $1.2 to get $1 of ARR. And to me, that would appear that you run the risk of running at a loss. Now, obviously, hopefully that ARR is not churning and you're getting that dollar multiple times. But why is the expectation that you're spending more than a dollar to get $1 of ARR?
Well, I think people would prefer to spend less. I just think the reality of what's happening in CAC ratios right now in a market recession where you have fewer people in market, but you have more competitors competing for search terms, is your cost per sales accepted opportunity, we call SAOs, goes up. So it is more of the competitive dynamic of a shrinking demand or a demand stalling demand. Back in a day in the 2020s, you probably could have a CAC ratio of less than a buck. The assumption, though, is to your point that that's your investment to get that $1 ARR for year one. Your hope is you preserve that dollar ARR and add to it. So your gross retention and your net retention over a significant period of time. And that customer starts to become profitable for you after year one. But if your CAC payback period is 26 months, for example, and customers are churning after year one, to your point, you burned a bunch of money to not get enough ARR to drive growth. So those have to be balanced.
I want to go back a little bit more with that information and overlay it against the state of SaaS. The title for this episode was Deciphering the State of SaaS. And high level, what I'm hearing is we're not focused at growth at all cost. You can invest marketing dollars beyond what your ARR is and still be seen as a company that should have a high valuation, and you're not sinking the boat by spending more in marketing than you're bringing in within that year. For marketers, as they're thinking about making sure that their marketing programs in SaaS companies are appropriate, what are some of the ways that we should be thinking about investing in marketing? Have you seen a different channel mix as we've gone away from growth at all costs?
Yes. And I think the most important thing that marketers need to focus on is their overall marketing budget in terms of what's being spent on people, tech, and programs, and then double clicking into programs in terms of paid advertising versus other programs. And they need to really be able to justify if they're making additional investments in people. Like every marginal dollar that I care about as CEO going to marketing is go program spend, buy me more search terms. And I think there's some good, OpenView had some great analysis around that in terms of ratios that you would spend broadly across your investment. And I think as marketers, it's like we all love technologies. Well, how much should you be spending on new technologies and versus, again, program spend? I'm always going to push towards program spend. Within program spend, I think there are two broad buckets, demand creation, demand capture. I think a lot of B2B SaaS companies probably focus more on demand capture, lower funnel, easier to measure. We can go down the marketing attribution rabbit hole if you want, but having some sort of attribution tool in place so it's not just last touch and thinking broadly about the channel mix is important. What I would say in this world is the B2B Institute worked with someone, I forget who it was. They came out with a report and now everyone's talking about, hey, 95% of your buyers aren't in market. Only 5% are. So I think B2B tech has probably underinvested in demand creation. And how do you actually get in front of people at those category entry points? Or how do you, there's another person that talks about mental availability. Like, how do you get known? And I think for companies like ours, we launched a new brand in 2022. And what we found, we just did a brand survey, was that a lot of people still remember the legacy brand. So SaaS Optics and Chargeify, but don't know the new brand because they were in market 3 years ago. So for us, in a situation where we're building a new brand, extending the category, we need to dial up our demand creation investment, brand awareness, thought leadership, hence the Maxio Institute and other things. So I think it really comes down to where are you in your category? Are you an established category leader? Where are you with your brand? Are you a new brand? How do you think about getting in front of people and what's the right ratio? So I don't know, is it 50-50 between demand creation, demand capture? Maybe. I would bet if most B2B marketers looked at their budget, they're probably indexing to like 80-20 demand capture versus demand creation. Maybe I'd ask you, what have you seen? You've talked to a lot more marketers than I do in terms of the split between demand creation and demand capture.
I'm biased. I run a company that focuses on demand creation.
Right.
And everyone always asks us for demand capture, right? We create podcasts for mostly B2B brands. And it's like, hey, we're a content marketing engine. We're going to build audience for you. And we have some nice hooks into your demand capture tools. But if you're looking for direct click attribution from a podcast, you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
So my hope is people have the realization of what you're talking about because it's good for business. In reality, I see our customers specifically are asking more about how do I recognize the demand capture from the demand creation tools. So we're getting into things like retargeting podcast audiences to feed into demand capture results or using ABM strategies with podcast guests. So I agree with you that there is a problem. I wish people understood demand capture and its value and understood the success criteria for it, that it is essentially a leading indicator for demand capture.
You know, what's interesting for me is, and I've talked to a bunch, I'm not a founder. Like I'm not smart enough to be a founder. I don't have the guts to be a founder. And I think a lot of founders in B2B tech are technologists. And I love when engineers think they can be marketers. And I have been at lots of companies where engineering leaders say, hey, I know how to do marketing. And they look at it as a math problem. And they're going to optimize the bottom of the funnel. And they're going to tell you how to do copy and et cetera. And I think the advantage I have, having grown up as in companies like Microsoft and Salesforce and some of these companies that really do brilliant branding campaigns, is it's art and science. And I do think on the demand creation side, if you're trying to hold it to demand capture, like how much should I get from the podcast? It's never going to be that. I do think one thing that we're doing, for example, we did a brand survey. I think I alluded to that. And we're just going to do that every year. And we're going to see, are we able to improve both our unaided and aided awareness? And if so, then we know our demand creation is working. And what's the right ratio? I don't know. But I can tell you this, there's an efficient frontier with search spend. So for example, G2 right now, or paid media, but I'll come back to search in a second. In G2, that's a great source for us. We can't spend more with G2 right now. We've tapped out. So LinkedIn, another great source for us, right? ABM and LinkedIn, we're almost tapped out with how much we're spending in terms of the ads and the marginal return for the spend. Search is this ongoing crazy world of Google messes with things every once in a while, but I don't know if we've tapped out the efficient frontier in terms of marginal dollars driving bottom of the funnel. What I can tell you is we spend a lot of money on search.
Are you talking about paid search or organic search?
Paid search. I'll come to organic in a second, but you know, primarily paid search. But you got to fill that funnel, right? You got to get more people in. I know there are 40,000 accounts that we think could be buying our technology right now. And we're actively engaged with, I don't know, 2,000 a year. So how do we get in front of those other 38,000? And I think that's a brand creation challenge.
You just got to last 80 years.
That's right.
It's funny, Randy, you took the words out of my mouth, which is marketing is an art and a science. I run the MarTech podcast. I talk about the technology used for marketing every day. I run some sort of a hybrid product and service company, which is built to look like a SaaS company, even though a lot of what we're doing is service-based. The operating system for podcasts is what we're leaning towards now. And I'm feeling all of what you're saying. And the thing that I wish I could impart on everyone who is or isn't a marketer, but responsible for marketing, most of the time it's somebody in an executive chair like yourself, is different channels have different time to maturity. And the time to maturity tends to have a lower CAC if you have the patience. If you invest in organic search and you take these 6 months to a year to cultivate the channel and then to figure out your growth hooks to convert those demand creation into capture, you have a very sustainable low CAC to LTV ratio, right? That dollar you put into organic search now will produce a dollar in 6 months and a dollar in 7 months and a dollar in 8 months and a dollar in 9 months. And you don't have to continue to recreate that. It isn't the toll booth that paid is, but most people haven't had the career experience in marketing or the patience to cultivate those channels and see the success on the back end. And honestly, the concern is that we're going from chief marketing officers to chief revenue officers, and the attention span for marketing has shortened from multiple years because the CMO's gone after 18 months to now 6 months. And so you're missing out on those high efficiency channels because you just don't have the patience to be able to let them grow.
There was a guy, the CEO of ProfitWell, that was bought by Paddle for some crazy amount of money, who really got me hooked on this idea of media-led growth. So he does podcasts and content, which is the new version of content-led growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it takes a while to build your thought leadership pillars, your foundation. And the stories that you're telling in the market using things like the Maxfield Institute, like we have data that no one else has. So how do we tell stories around that that makes us interesting and compelling for people to learn more? Is hard and it takes time, but it is the only way, I think, to differentiate in the marketplace.
I want to put a pin in this right here because we've got another episode tomorrow that we're going to talk about that gets right into that specific topic. So here's your teaser, everyone. We're going to finish this conversation tomorrow. And that wraps up this episode of the MarTech Podcast. Thanks for listening to my conversation with Randy Wooten, the CEO of Maxio. Join us again tomorrow when Randy and I continue our conversation talking about making your SaaS business a must-have. If you can't wait till our next episode and you'd like to learn more about Randy, you can find a link to his LinkedIn profile in our show notes. You can contact him on Twitter. His handle is RandyWooten3, that's RandyWooton, the number 3. Or you could visit his company's website, which is maxio.com, maxio.com. Just one more link in our show notes I'd like to tell you about. If you didn't have a chance to take notes while you were listening to this podcast, head over to martechpod.com, where we have summaries of all of our episodes and contact information for our guests. You can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and apply to be the next guest speaker on the MarTech Podcast. Of course, you can always reach out on social media. Our handle is MarTechPod, MartechPod on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Or you can contact me directly on LinkedIn. My handle is Ben J. Schaap, BenJShap. And if you haven't subscribed yet and you want a daily stream of marketing and technology knowledge in your podcast feed, we're going to publish an episode every day this year. So hit the subscribe button in your podcast app and we'll be back in your feed tomorrow morning. All right, that's it for today. But until next time, my advice is to just focus on keeping your customers happy.
Thanks for listening to the MarTech Podcast, and I Hear Everything production. Looking to launch or scale a podcast like this one for your brand? Then visit iHearEverything.com.